Hello and welcome to another bonus episode of Conspiracy You Can Believe In. If you listened to the episode from 2 weeks ago, that was about the Somerdale scandal. This was a scandal from the late 50s where a group of police in the Uptown and Edgewater neighborhoods of Chicago basically hired out a cat burglar to rob a bunch of businesses and houses throughout Chicago for a couple years. It was a massive scandal in the early 60s when it got found out. And if you'd like to learn more about it, I recommend you listen to that episode if you haven't already. But today we're talking about a different group of people that was in that same neighborhood at the same time, in Uptown in the late 50s throughout the 60s and 70s. It was a group called the Young Patriots, and they often had run-ins with the Somerdale police because they were a group of young, working-class, white Southern radicals who cooperated with the Black Panthers. It's a really interesting story that I don't see talked about a whole lot, so I wanted to do a bonus episode on them. And just to remind you, bonus episodes, these aren't about a conspiracy necessarily, and these aren't scripted. These are just intended to be bits of information that I found interesting while I was researching for the previous episode. So let's get into it. Uptown Chicago and the Young Patriots. Uptown is one of the neighborhoods on the north side of Chicago, and if you know the geography of the city pretty well, it's Lake Michigan on the east. The western border is around Ravenswood Avenue, southern border is Montrose Avenue, and the northern border is, I believe, Foster Avenue. So it's kind of on the far northern side of the city, and for a lot of Uptown's history, it's been associated with slums, basically. That was certainly true for the time period we're talking about in the late 50s and throughout the 60s and early 70s. Today, Uptown is a really diverse area. It's experiencing a lot of issues with gentrification, which is making the neighborhood too expensive to live in for a lot of the original residents. But the time period we're talking about, late 50s, that's when a lot of migrants from the South started to move to cities in the North. But we're talking about white migrants from the South. Now, if you listen to the episode I did on the 1919 race riot, I talked about what's called the Great Migration. That's when Black Southerners began to move up to cities like Chicago, and that process began at the beginning of the 20th century. But there was another migration from the South, and a lot of this happened from Appalachia or from other parts of the South to northern industrial cities like Chicago, and it was called the Hillbilly Highway. Now, these were mostly white Southerners who, many of them either worked in agriculture or the coal industry, and these were both industries that were experiencing a lot of automation, which ended their careers, essentially. So you had a lot of people in states like Tennessee, West Virginia, Kentucky, Virginia, Alabama, who were working good-paying union jobs digging coal. Automation comes in, they're out of a job, and there's really not a lot of union density in the South. There did start to be more industrialization from the North, but these were often low-paying jobs. Companies would build factories in the South specifically to avoid paying for union labor, essentially. So these people went north looking for those good-paying jobs. And it was a very large migration. There were southern neighborhoods in cities like Akron, in St. Louis, Detroit, and in Chicago. And the biggest neighborhood for these people, where a lot of them ended up, was Uptown. And by one point in the 60s, it's estimated about something like 40,000 of the neighborhood's residents were migrants from the South, white migrants from the South, or their children. And it sounds weird to talk about white Southerners as like a different ethnic group. A few of them were members of the Young Patriots, which I'll get into later on in the show, but they were a group of these hillbillies that moved to Uptown, and they very much embraced this hillbilly Appalachian identity. And that set them apart from a lot of the other ethnic neighborhoods in the city. I think I've mentioned before, I'm myself from Alabama and I moved to Chicago, but a lot of the other neighborhoods in the city at the time were, they were people like my parents who came from Midwestern Catholic backgrounds, usually with some pretty recent European immigration in their family. You know, you had neighborhoods like Bridgeport, where the Irish were. Lincoln Square was like a German Catholic neighborhood. All throughout the Northwest Side, there was Polish neighborhoods. The Near West Side had Italians and Greeks and Jews. But white Southerners, typically very poor white Southerners, began to move to Chicago in very large numbers in the 50s. And they almost all settled around or in Uptown. A lot of them chose Uptown because it had a lot of single-room occupancy hotels where they could get cheap rent. It did have a lot of substandard dwellings, a lot of subdivided apartments where they could save money on living while they were going out looking for work. The problem was there wasn't a lot of work for them, and unemployment throughout the 60s was pretty high in Uptown, sometimes as high as like 47%. And a lot of people in Chicago did not view the white Southern migrants very positively. There's a series of news stories from the Chicago Tribune that was in the late 50s where they sent a reporter into this area. Back then, they called it Hillbilly Heaven because there were so many people from like Tennessee and Kentucky and Virginia moving in to the neighborhood. And they just described them in almost like they were people from another country. The way that the reporter would talk about them was as if their customs were totally foreign to the United States, and as if these people were some kind of problem that needed to be solved by some kind of migration officials. Like it talked about crime in the neighborhood and people not having traditional nuclear families and gangs of greasers, which were like kids with slick back hair and leather jackets riding on motorcycles and stuff like that. They were white Americans from usually Protestant, old stock American backgrounds who were being otherized by other white Americans, essentially. It's very strange to go back and read some of the snippets from these news stories. But the problems in Uptown were very real. You know, crime was a big problem. You had people that couldn't find work and had to, in some cases, rely on either the black market or joining a gang. There were a lot of families that required welfare. A lot of people relied on day labor for their sole source of income, which can easily dry up, and you don't get any kind of benefits from that either. So it wasn't a great place for a lot of these people, and they were put into these apartment buildings that were not well cared for by absentee landlords. There were a lot of serious issues that these white Southern migrants to Uptown were dealing with in the 60s. But another thing that was happening nationally during that time was this idea of ending poverty in the United States really got into the national consciousness. These were the decades after World War II where there was a huge amount of prosperity for many people in the country, but it wasn't shared out. There was still a huge problem with food insecurity, with joblessness, with poverty. A lot of these issues were laid out to prominent Americans and the public in this book called The Other America, written by a then prominent American socialist, Michael Harrington. Harrington would go on to help co-found the Democratic Socialists of America, which, as in disclosure, I've been a member of that organization for about the past 5 years or so. But it's a great book, The Other America. I would recommend reading it, if only to get a sense of like what started the federal war on poverty, because this had a huge influence on the way people thought about poverty in the 60s, which was even moderate, politically moderate people started to take the view that, hey, you know, we can end poverty as we know it in the United States. And there were a couple groups that got ahead of the federal government that started to do war on poverty programs, basically, before Lyndon B. Johnson started it in 1964 as a federal program. One of these groups was called ERAP, the Economic Research and Action Program. This was a collaboration between the United Auto Workers Union and Students for a Democratic Society, or SDS, which would go on to become like this huge radical organization in the late 60s. From ERAP came this other group called JOIN, which stands for Jobs or Income Now. And Jobs or Income Now was very involved in Uptown throughout the early to mid 60s. They had soup kitchens, they had a community theater, they helped organize rent strikes against absentee or negligent landlords. I believe they also established a clinic in Uptown. And these were all things that people needed, but they didn't get access to it from the local or federal government yet at the time. And so what JOIN was doing was pushing these collective action solutions to problems that almost everybody in the neighborhood faced. Remember, about 40,000 people in this neighborhood by this time are migrants from the South or families of people that had migrated to Chicago from the South. So JOIN was operating for several years, and then in 1968, Students for a Democratic Society started to split up into different ideological groups, and there's a lot of reasons for that that I won't get into, but one of the groups that split off was JOIN, basically. So the people from Uptown more or less declared independence from SDS. One of the JOIN members was this woman named Peggy Terry, who she was a migrant from Oklahoma, and she joined a third party called the Peace and Freedom Party and ran as the vice presidential candidate in 1968 with Eldridge Cleaver. And Cleaver was a leader in the Black Panther Party. So it's around 1968, you really start to see radical politics among a few very active white Southerners who live in Uptown becoming a feature of the Uptown community. And one of the interesting ways in this time, in the late 60s, that communities got into political activism was through street gangs, because a lot of these street gangs were like clubs for working class kids who either couldn't find employment, and yeah, in some cases they did turn to violence, but in the late 60s, the gangs would turn and become almost like community activist groups. And one of these in Uptown was a gang called the Goodfellows. The Goodfellows were Southern migrants, white Southern migrants, who had a street gang. They were basically the greasers that the Chicago Tribune was so afraid of, these kids with slick back hair and switchblades and blue jeans and all that stuff. But young people from the Goodfellows, like this guy Hi Thurman, who was a migrant from Tennessee, and a guy named William Preacher Man Fesperman, they organized the Goodfellows to work with JOIN to start to address problems that they had in the community. And by 1968, there was a lot of political tension in the country, and that didn't escape the members of the Goodfellows. You know, these were white guys from the South, but they started reading about socialism. They started getting mad that their friends were being sent off to go die in Vietnam. They were mad that the police from the corrupt Somerdale precinct, which they call out several times in their literature, were beating them. There was a lot of police brutality in the Uptown neighborhood, and they got really mad about it. And they became very left-wing, and they organized into a group called the Young Patriots. And they chose that name because they saw the Patriots during the American Revolution as like this underground group of people that kind of fought the man, basically. And they wanted to organize around that identity. This was around the same time that a group called the Young Lords were active in Lincoln Park, another neighborhood on the north side of Chicago. They were a Puerto Rican political organization of young people that were also organizing to enact social change. And the Black Panthers were, of course, getting very big in Chicago at this time, too, and you've probably heard of them. So these were groups of young, working-class kids, in the case of the Young Lords, largely from a Puerto Rican background, and they really embraced this Puerto Rican identity. And, of course, the Black Panthers embraced this African identity. They shared a commitment to socialism, to ending police brutality, to fighting against all these different systems of oppression like police brutality and patriarchy and capitalism and, of course, racism. But how did the Young Patriots fit into this? They were a little different because everyone knew, you know, these were white guys from the South, but they were building this identity around being these young, radical, working class white guys. And they were doing the same things that JOIN was, a lot of these anti-poverty programs. The thing that they began to realize that they had in common with the Black Panthers and the Young Lords was they were poor too. Their friends were being sent off to Vietnam, and they were getting hassled by the police. Uptown very easily could have been, and was in some cases, a breeding ground for far-right groups that were common in the South, like the Ku Klux Klan. What the Young Patriots wanted to do was to bring these working-class white Southerners into what they saw as a more positive identity that was built around solidarity among other working-class people of Chicago that were fighting all of these social ills that they were dealing with in their neighborhood and not succumbing to the racism that people associated with white Southerners. Now, this is where it's kind of interesting because one of the symbols that the Young Patriots used was the Confederate flag. And there are several interviews with Hi Thurman, who he's still alive and he still gives interviews about the Young Patriots, where he addresses them using the symbol of the Confederate flag. And his reasoning is basically that the rebel flag was so ubiquitous in Uptown, it was all over the place because that was what people saw as Southern identity, that they didn't really think it was possible to get rid of it and to convince people to stop using it as a symbol. So they tried to repurpose it by wearing it on these gold berets that they wore, just like the Black Panthers had berets, but next to a Black Power symbol, or wearing it on a jean jacket with a Free Huey Newton button, and then starting conversations with people who would inevitably ask them about this and explain what they were doing. I don't know if that's a good idea. Personally, I think that the Confederate flag is pretty much beyond any reclaiming. It's a symbol of slavery, obviously. And even Hi Thurman himself today says, yeah, if I could go back, I wouldn't have done that. And that the rebel flag is, you know, something that belongs in the dustbin of history. But that is something that you notice when you look at pictures of the Young Patriots. You know, they're at these meetings with the Black Panthers, all of these young radical guys in berets and sunglasses, and then the white guys have a rebel flag patch on the beret next to a Black Power symbol. It is very strange to see these pictures, especially, you know, knowing the symbolism behind the Confederate flag. But I do think that the Young Patriots were sincere into trying to get people in their community, especially young people, involved in a more radical, anti-racist form of politics that maybe they hadn't experienced before. So you had people from the Young Patriots Party who would talk to young people on street corners, who would organize parties and dances and stuff where they could get their neighbors face to face and talk about what problems they were dealing with and how they could collectively solve them. The Black Panthers, when they started working with them, showed them how to do Serve the People programs, which is one of the more famous ones that the Black Panthers did was Free Breakfast for Children, which they were doing in Chicago at the time as well. They were led at the time by a very charismatic young guy. I think he was only 20 at this time, named Fred Hampton. He was the leader of the Black Panthers in Chicago. He and Bobby Lee, who is now Bobby Rush, he's a congressperson who, well, now he's actually a little right wing, but at the time he was a Black Panther. But these guys came in and started working with the Young Patriots and eventually forged an alliance. This was called the Rainbow Coalition. This is a term that Jesse Jackson would later use, but that's a different organization. So sometimes this is referred to as the First Rainbow Coalition, but this was a group of young radicals of several different races that had different organizations, Young Lords, the Young Patriots, and the Black Panthers, that began working together. And they would do things like organize community meetings for people in the neighborhood that had problems with things like their housing or lack of work or any of the many issues that Uptown faced. The Young Patriots wanted to step in as like a community organization that could be led by local people in the neighborhood, instead of some other NGO or government agency swooping in to deal with it. And one of their biggest projects was something called Rising Up Angry. And this was a community political newspaper that was run by the Young Patriots. And you can go online and all of the issues are available. You can go and read them. I read through some of the early issues and I skimmed through some of the other ones. And it's very interesting because Rising Up Angry is a socialist magazine from the late 60s, which is designed to appeal to a working class white audience of the 50s, and more specifically, the hillbilly audience of Uptown. So in the first issue, for instance, you have articles about how the Black Panthers are really cool and how people need abortion access, and it's next to an article about hot rods or a review of a Rolling Stones concert, you know, something that would interest a kind of young macho element that they're trying to bring into this organization and radicalize, basically. It was also something of like a community bulletin board where they could write up either future events that they're planning. And a lot of them that I see in the publications are run-ins with police. They'll write up all of these different run-ins with police. And I found one about the Somerdale cops. The Young Patriots hated the Somerdale police. And here's just one excerpt from their paper. This is the Young Patriots Uptown. Ever since the pigs found out that we and the Young Patriots of Uptown are a part of the Rainbow Coalition with the Black Panthers and the Young Lords, they've been worried as hell. When we wear our gold Young Patriot berets, we're continually harassed by the cops in the neighborhood. The cops have threatened people in our neighborhood that if they join us, they'll get the shit beat out of them. Plainclothes pigs are always watching our office on Wilson Avenue, trying to discourage new guys from coming around and talking with us. One day, one of us was pulled into the 20th District Foster Avenue station, and then in parentheses, it used to be called Somerdale, but pigs were caught with stolen goods in the basement, because he was talking to kids on a corner. Five Patriots made it to the station fast and demanded his release. They let him go and didn't have a chance to work him over like they have done to some of our people in the past. So right there, you have specifically them calling out the corruption of the Somerdale scandal. And this was 8 years after that story was in the news. Everyone remembered who the Somerdale police were because of the association with Richie Morrison and all the cat burglaries and stuff that happened, because the corruption was just right out there in the open. Now, some of the stuff that the Young Patriots dealt with specifically regarding the police is pretty bad. I've listened to some interviews from Hi Thurman and read some interviews where he talks about the Somerdale police sexually assaulting women in the Uptown neighborhood, taking Young Patriot members or people suspected to be Young Patriot members in on gang charges and trying to force them to either become informants or confess to crimes that they didn't do. And if they didn't do it, putting a phone book over their head and then beating them with nightsticks apparently was a pretty common torture. And in many other cases, they would outright kill people. And one interview, Hi Thurman mentions his friend Willie, who was picked up by police and dropped off in an alleyway by the Wilson Red Line L station. And they told him to walk off and that he wouldn't be charged, and then shot him in the back when he was trying to get away. So this caused a huge march on the Somerdale precinct station. And there were several of them throughout the late 60s. So Rising Up Angry, the newspaper that the Young Patriots formed, ended up becoming like this mouthpiece for all sorts of community and national issues. They wrote about the war in Vietnam. They wrote about protesting police brutality. They wrote about what their allies and the Black Panthers, the Young Lords, were doing. And they tried to put everything, if you read some of these pieces, like they try to put a Marxist worldview in a very easy to understand way that perhaps an uneducated white Southerner who's young, looking for work, is pissed off, would understand. It's very interesting to go back and read these publications, whether you agree with them or not. And they did do a lot of things in the community. The staff of Rising Up Angry started a legal clinic to help people in disputes with landlords, to help people in disputes with their employers, or with police to get out of bogus charges. The Young Patriots would organize community defense against slumlords, and in one case, an exploitative furniture insurance business that was kind of scamming a lot of people in Uptown. And it wasn't just smaller projects that they took on. One of the more interesting ones was a project called Hank Williams Village. And this was a project of the Young Patriots and other community organizations in Uptown that started in 1968. Because along with the war on poverty being a national conversation, if you want to say, that was happening in the 60s, slum clearance and urban renewal was another one. And urban renewal often meant kicking the poor people out of one neighborhood, building something nice that they don't get to live in, and then saying that, you know, you solve the problems of poverty in the neighborhood. That was about to happen in Uptown with Truman College. Now, Truman College exists to this day, so not to spoil it for you, but they did build the college. But Truman College was originally supposed to be a massive campus for the City of Chicago colleges that was going to displace up to 6,000 people. A lot of these people were white Southern migrants who lived in cheap apartment dwellings that were run by pretty bad people. One of the things that High Thurman claims happened in 1968 was that a slumlord burned down the apartment building he owned to sell the land to the city, and it killed 35 people that lived there. And it was never prosecuted by police because the city ultimately wanted this land cleared so that they could build the college. A lot of the people in the community were very, very against it because they didn't want to be displaced. They didn't want to be kicked out of their neighborhood because where else could they afford to live? So what they did is the Young Patriots and other community groups got together and they had a counterproposal for the city. And the counterproposal was called Hank Williams Village. At this point in the late 60s and throughout the 70s, the city was open to making some cosmetic changes to name things after certain ethnic groups or that things that they think people in the neighborhood would like. For instance, one college in a Jewish community was called Theodore Herzl College, and another college that's on the west side of Chicago in a black neighborhood is called Malcolm X College, and it still is to this day. Hank Williams was the closest thing that the white migrants from the South in Uptown had to like a cultural symbol that they could all agree on. You know, everyone loved the music of Hank Williams, and they were going to name this new community after him. And the stuff in the counterproposal is very interesting because this was in 1968, and if you read about some of the stuff that they wanted to have, it sounds very much like what a lot of urban planners today want in neighborhoods. It focused on walkability, on instead of devoting huge parts of the street to cars alone, to make pedestrian walkways, to renovate buildings instead of building up new ones and tearing down old ones, which is way cheaper and doesn't displace a lot of people. That's today a huge movement in Chicago where people want to renovate buildings instead of, you know, tearing down and building new developments. They also included plans to have daycares and clinics and businesses that people needed within either the basements or the first floors of apartment buildings. That's a major trend in urban design. All of this was designed by a guy named Rodney Wright, who was a self-taught architect. Rodney Wright would go on to become a pioneer in energy-efficient building design and designing buildings for solar power. So it was a real proposal for a new type of city to be built in Uptown, designed by the residents and for the residents themselves. And the Young Patriots were heavily involved, and it almost happened. Because the city was about to back off, there was this old amusement park, I think it's around Roscoe Village, called Riverview, and it was closing down, and the city almost built Truman College there instead. But the deal fell through, and so Uptown was back on the menu. Truman College got built, a lot of people got displaced, but the community was able to work out a deal because they had such a strong counterproposal where not nearly as many people got displaced. I think it was only about 1,500 instead of the original 6,000, and all of the moving costs were paid for by the college and the city. Now, stuff like this, and especially stuff like the Young Patriots working in tandem with the Black Panthers by 1969, really scared the hell out of the city and the federal government. They weren't just doing community support projects, although Mayor Daley did not like that, but they were agitating against the Vietnam War, against police brutality. They were being watched by the FBI. by this point. And in December of 1969, the FBI and the city police, the Chicago Police Department, and a special unit from the state's attorney police, they assassinated Fred Hampton. In December 1969, they broke into his apartment in the middle of the night. They shot him multiple times while he was sleeping. I believe Fred Hampton was only 21 or 22 years old at this point. This definitely happened, by the way. If you go to the DuSable African American Museum in Chicago, in the bottom floor, they have a permanent exhibit on the assassination of Fred Hampton. There are court documents proving that the state's attorney intentionally had him killed and planned to do so. Like, this happened. So when the FBI and the local police essentially execute the head of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panthers, that drove the entire organization underground. People were terrified of being arrested, put in prison for the rest of their life, or just flat out killed by the police. And because the Young Patriots were so closely associated with the Black Panthers, they had to tone it down for the next few years, and it unfortunately kind of fizzled out. They were still there in Uptown. They were still publishing Rising Up Angry for another 5 or 6 years, but they were staying away from the more radical actions that might generate police activity. So they're still there, but it's more on the margins. It's nowhere near at the level of activity that it was in December of 1968 and 69, when they were marching on the Summerdale police station every chance they got, when they were doing direct actions against slumlords, when they were out on the street corner selling Rising Up Angry and denouncing the government and Mayor Daley and all that stuff. They couldn't really do that anymore. So the Young Patriots became a thing of the past. Some of their founders are still around. Hi Thurman often gives interviews. He used to do walking tours in Chicago, which I unfortunately have never taken one. I believe he's in Alabama now, and he's trying to kind of revive the organization. But it's very interesting that the Uptown neighborhood, which throughout the 60s and early 70s had a very strong Appalachian white Southern identity, that got turned into this close association with radical leftist politics. I mean, this is an interesting situation. But I have to say, if you go there today, you don't really see much evidence of the Appalachian identity specifically. I know there's a bar called Carol's, which I believe is run by another fellow Alabamian. That's like a country and western bar. But beyond that, there's really not much of this identity that it once had as a southern migrant neighborhood. But there is a lot of interesting politics still today in Uptown that I think is kind of a descendant of that spirit from Rising Up Angry and the Young Patriot Party. There's an alderman there, James Kappelman, whose big policy is essentially to reform the neighborhood with new development. You know, and this harkens back to the slum clearances from, say, Truman College. He's very much in that vein. When he first got elected about 10 years ago, he ran as this kind of good government reform type guy. You know, he was a former social worker. He tried to make it sound like he really cared about the poor. And then the first thing he did was he cleared out all of these homeless camps in Uptown. And he started tearing down a lot of the single room occupancy hotels where people that occasionally are in need of shelter, that's the first place that they go. And there's a growing agitation against Kappelman, against what people see as gentrification, making their rent raise to the point where they have to either leave the neighborhood or leave the city entirely. Kappelman barely won re-election the last time. I think he only won by like 25 votes. But the movement against development at all costs and development that displaces people, that's driving the politics in Uptown now. And a lot of that honestly sounds a little bit like what the Young Patriots were trying to do, which was to have decisions in their community made by people that actually live there and would be affected by the consequences. And to have local institutions that are run by people that actually live there and are able to serve the needs of the community that they live in. And at the local level, you know, that's what groups like the Black Panthers and the Young Lords and the Young Patriots were trying to do. And Uptown is changing. I don't know what direction it's going to go, if it's going to be too expensive for working people to live there in the near future or not. But in that struggle for the poor people to survive, I think the legacy of the Young Patriots lives on. So that's the story of Uptown and the Young Patriots and some of their run-ins with the Somerdale police. I'll drop links in the description to interviews and back issues of Rising Up Angry and other resources if you want to look into some of this for yourself. Thanks for listening. I'm going to try to do one more episode in December before the holidays, maybe take a little break, and then we'll get right back into it in the new year. Again, thank you so much for listening.